Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, July 14th, 2011. Guelph's annual Art on the Street will have a Christian presence this year thanks to participating artists and the Royal City Church. Taking place this Saturday, July 16th, Art on the Street is an annual downtown Guelph event sponsored by the Downtown Guelph Business Association and the Guelph Arts Council. The event closes down one of the main streets as 60-plus artists display their works, featuring everything from photography to sculpture to blacksmithing to painting and everything in between. Looking at the list of artists, I recognize the names of a few who are Christian, including photographer Ainsley Boyd and painter Tina Newlove. And Tina painted the cover art for Guelph violinist Trevor Dix's CD Yahweh. Well, right in the middle of these artists is Royal City Church, which from 11 to 7 p.m. will host a community art display and live music, along with free coffee and baked goods. Now, I've been to Art on the Street in the past. I won't make it this year because I have a family commitment out of town, but it's always exciting to see the variety of artists and art displayed. And it's especially gratifying to see a Christian presence in this festival as well. I just wish I could be there this year to experience it.
Fast as you can, with your face first
That was A New Start to Start from Under Skies by Hark the Herons, which is a duo of Kalen Allen and Down Here bassist Glenn Lavender. This is a great CD with an indie style, and I had the chance to catch them in concert at a Cambridge Starbucks, and their live performance was just as fresh and exciting as their CD, and it was amazing to see how this duo was able to replicate live the layered multi-instrument sounding of their recording. Well, Alora artist Phil Irish has finished mapping and painting the Grand River and has taken a new turn with his paintings. Growth Charting is the title Phil has given to his latest collection of works, an exhibit which is just wrapping up at the Harbinger Gallery in Waterloo. Phil's also been on the road traveling to the West Coast for the Christians and Visual Arts Conference in L.A. and Gamblin Artist Colors Factory in Portland, Oregon. Phil's on the line with us to talk about his work and his travels. Good evening, Phil.
Hello, Robert.
Now, let's go back to the beginning for our listeners. Some of them may not know a lot about you and some of your background. When did you discover that you like painting?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that would go a long way back. I've been moving color around for a long time. I think probably the story starts when I'm four, when I was four. When I was really little before that, I actually never picked up a crayon. My mom, you know, thought I just totally wasn't into that. And we were in France, and living there for a few months, and I felt ostracized at the playground, couldn't speak French, the kids made fun of me. My mom gave me these amazing markers, and I just started drawing. So I don't know if there's a connection between art and suffering or something, but anyway, that turned me loose to the joy of color, and I never stopped drawing after that. So
was it color that kind of really attracted you to this whole process?
Well, it's funny because patterns, where I would fill the whole page with different kinds of textures and patterns, and my mom would say, "Oh, and what is that, honey?" It's just, you know how parents try and get their kids to talk about what they're drawing, right? And I would say, "Mom, it's a design." So basically, I was making abstract work and didn't want any labels on it at age four.
At age four, wow. Now, I know that one of the things I've found, and I've been to a couple of conferences and specifically writers' conferences, where sort of the big breakthrough moment for writers, and that is when they finally say and define themselves as a writer. Sort of, when did that moment for you as an artist come, when you first said, "I am an artist"?
Well, I think, I mean, all the way through high school, I was very involved in art making, including doing theater designs. There were a group of us in high school that were quite ambitious about theater. And I started off acting with that gang and ended up doing sets for a number of shows. We even rented the Humanities Theater at the University of Waterloo. And if you imagine a bunch of teenagers putting out the money to rent the Humanities Theater, I look back at that and think, wow, it was pretty wild. But yeah, painting was, painting and drawing, visual art was really what made me tick. But I think I was even a little bit cautious about that. Even when I went to university, I took fine art at University of Guelph, and perhaps going to a university instead of going to OCAD or something might have been hedging my bets. But as early as that, I was very serious about being an artist.
Now, when we first met a couple of years ago, you were getting ready for the exhibit of the Watershed exhibition.
Yes.
When you sort of did this, and it was a selection of paintings and people and places and events along the Grand River, what sort of moved you from the Watershed paintings into Growth Charting?
I mean, artists are always seeking new directions and new things to explore. I've certainly done a lot of different projects where the visual language shifts quite a bit between projects. Watershed was the perhaps culmination of 5 years, really, of working with maps and people's personal stories and a sense of place, how memory shapes what places mean to people, how you can share that with someone else. There's a whole set of ideas there that just kept getting richer and richer as I worked on them. So I'm very, very proud of that whole stream of work, and Watershed is kind of the culmination of that. I began to feel like I was so invested in the stories and making each painting was kind of responding to a different story, that a certain curiosity about the paint itself, sometimes I'd finish a painting and I'd think, oh, I could do three more things that follow this thread, but I wouldn't because I had another story to do. And there was a kind of voraciousness and excitement about that. But I came to a point where I was like, you know what, I need to look a little more inward. I need to listen to the process in the studio differently. And so I began asking sort of a different set of questions, I guess, in the studio.
Now, you also started a fine arts program at York. Did that sort of help change some of the direction of what you were doing with your art?
For sure. Yeah, so I've started doing the master's program at York University. It's an interesting time to do that in that I've been a practicing artist for, I don't know, you could say 15 years or something like that. So going back to school and asking a whole new set of questions and being in that academic environment again has been really thrilling and useful. And I'm going into the program, I mean, you don't get much out of it if you just say, okay, you know, I'm going to keep the goals of my work the same as what they were before. So I went in with just a sense of some things I wanted to wrestle through and allowing those doors to be open to find kind of new answers in that. Now the growth charting pieces were sort of, they really come out of what I was doing in even my first semester last fall. Partly, you know, I've been reading a lot, thinking a lot, and I knew that I wanted to keep my hands in the game because you learn as an artist, you know, it's so visual, it's about being visual. So I gave myself just a set of parameters to work with. So it's all basically magnolia trees. They all use a kind of process that I touched on with in the mapping. So in the mapping paintings, I touched all kinds of different ways of representing things. It was a very exploratory mode. And I kind of went back and said, okay, if there's one thing in here that I wished I could have done more of, what was it? And it had to do with this kind of abstract layering of color and revealing layers from underneath through masking. And so all of the paintings in growth charting use that. And instead of kind of having an idea ahead of time of what I wanted that to say or to mean, which is kind of how the map paintings work, like I'm dealing with story and there's some fixed anchor points for meaning. Obviously there's a lot of openness and metaphor, but there's some anchor there. I really did let these pieces start more with the process and they could teach me kind of what they wanted to say, and I think they say a lot, so that's pretty exciting.
In looking at the academic end of things, had things changed in terms of perspective from when you were doing the fine arts program in Guelph and then doing your master's program now at York? Have you sort of seen a change in the way people are approaching painting in the way you yourself are starting to approach your art?
I obviously, you know, some things have changed for sure. The sense of how much imagery there is in the world and that kind of how we relate to being surrounded by imagery. That was certainly present before, but that's really escalated with computers and so on. So the way that people are talking about how we negotiate all these images around us, I think has changed. It's interesting to see people thinking about postmodernism differently. And that's kind of a big term, maybe for our audience here. But that, I mean, there are a whole thread of ideas that are in postmodernism about how meaning isn't fixed. And at the beginning, there was kind of an irony where people were making kind of these paintings that are about surface and not really about meaning and depth. And people have really sort of tired of some of that and are trying to find more fruitful ways through our kind of pluralist culture that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting seeing those kind of reflections. The younger students that I'm working with are like, you know, postmodernism for them is what they've always known. And so to see them like, oh, that's, you know, that's old hat, we're making something new, is kind of interesting compared to when I went to school before.
Right. Looking at one of the things we were talking about as well is the growth charting exhibit that started in early June. It's officially ended right now.
Yeah, actually, this past weekend was the last. I haven't checked in. Aggie Bainan runs that gallery. It's the Harbinger Gallery in Waterloo, which is a wonderful gallery, and it's been there for many years. I'm not sure. I'm going to say over 20 years. And she's been a great influence on culture in this area. So the show was officially ended, but she certainly has all the work, and she might even be extending the show, but I haven't touched base with her this week to see if that's true or not. She talked about maybe keeping it up a bit longer.
Right.
But there would certainly be work there if people wanted to go and see, whether it's in the back room or upstairs or in the main space. You can just pop in, because she certainly has the work there to show.
Right. Yeah. Well, what we need to do is we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with artist Phil Irish. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to You're Pretty But You're Hollow from the Hark the Heron CD, Under Skies. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Phil Irish. Well, Phil, along with the growth charting exhibit, you've been really busy in the last month or so. You had the trip out to California and Oregon. What led you out to the West Coast?
It was a great opportunity because two things came together at the same time. Otherwise, it might be a bit tricky to make a voyage like this. So the first part of my trip was spending several days in Portland, Oregon, where there is a paint manufacturer called Gamblin Artist Colors. I work for them doing education around oil painting, safe practices in the studio, how to make your paintings last, things like this. So I am sort of an employee with them, but I've never actually been out there. So it was a chance to meet with them, see the factory, see how everything's made. And since that was going on, I realized the Christians in the Visual Arts Conference was happening at around the same time. So I scheduled both things so that I could do them back to back. So I spent 5 days in Los Angeles at an amazing conference of a group called Christians in the Visual Arts.
Well, going to Oregon, we'll start with that one. What was it like for you as an artist to walk into a paint factory?
You know, it sounds funny, you know, paint factory, does an artist really care about that? But we were mentioning color before, and I'm kind of a color junkie. I just love it. And I love the history of pigments, and I often feel like, you know, different colors of paint, it's almost like it's my friend, you know, like I know burnt sienna, you know what it is, you know how it, you know, when it's thin, that warm glow that you get, how the light moves through it, you know, all these things. Every color has its own character.
I can visualize a smile on your face as you're talking about these colors.
Yeah, for sure. And so just to walk in and see, you know, these bags and bins of pigment and walk through and see how they're mixing it and testing it and making sure it's just right. And part of the pleasure is just talking with people that know so much about it. It's also a very innovative company in that they have a real concern for the environment. And so just hearing about, you know, the steps they've taken that way that are quite amazing. And even, like, for example, the solvent they use is people haven't been using turpentine so much for a long time because it's so harsh. but they have the safest one that there is, the safest odorless mineral spirits that there is. And it's actually used in makeup. So if people think that, you know, oil paint is this toxic thing, it's like, well, you're putting things like that on your face. So, they're just great people. So that was very exciting to do.
Was there sort of one thing that you kind of learned as you were there, especially about this key tool of your trade?
Well, it was just amazing to see how they, you know, just think about each ingredient that goes in there, you know, the kind of research and love that's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the main thing. It was great just talking pigments for 2 days. It was really, really just made me want to get back in the studio. It was great.
Well, and the other thing is you also had the Christian Visual Arts Conference. What was that like? Yeah, we were sort of talking about it just before going on the air, and you were sort of describing the vastness of this this conference.
It's an amazing group. I've been a member of this for, over 10 years. And every second year they do a conference. The last one I was at was actually in 97. That's when I first kind of got involved with them. And I haven't been able to be at one since. And it's just wonderful. It's incredibly diverse. And people are curious and you know, voracious about doing the best that they can do and what that means in terms of their love of God and serving the world. And how can you... You know, how can you give it everything you've got? And so there are amazingly wise and scholarly speakers, and the diversity of the group is astounding. So you'll get an Orthodox monk who spends his time making icons or painting, you know, domes of churches, and so you know he's fueling his inspiration from catacomb paintings, from the second century. And then the next person is from an evangelical church who paints at the front of the church during worship and considers himself part of the band. And there are people who are, you know, kind of responding in the mode of prophecy to what is going on, you know, through the art, through the word. Like, and then there are people more in the gallery context like myself and everything from, you know, making easel paintings to making robots or you know, experimental installation work and so on. We have a common basis for talking about what we do, but there's such diversity that it was really refreshing. The sessions were great, but then at mealtime, I didn't know anyone else there, right? I just went, and it was in California. I mean, most people in the group are Americans. There are some Canadians, but the Canadians that were there were from BC and Alberta. So I didn't really know people, and so I would just sit at a different table every mealtime and find out who people were, and it was really inspiring and exciting.
Well, having come back and sort of had a chance to look back on it, how did the conference itself encourage you, both as an artist and as a Christian?
Just seeing people integrating the life of faith and the life of imagination, and God as our creator, who also gives us freedom to imagine and change the world in different ways. One session that was interesting was about the overlap between historic Christian practices and studio practices. So where things like fasting or scripture reading or these different practices that are anchors of the life of faith, you know, it's interesting to see how there are many parallels in what an artist does in the studio, because being in the studio is about listening as well. So there was a great session on that where they had five artists just talking about how that works out for them. And they were very diverse. Sometimes perhaps contradictory, because it's such a wide group. So there were definitely people there that I thought, yeah, you know, this is really thought-provoking and wise stuff. And then it was just amazing to see the work that different people made. You know, there's this one guy that was taking fashion billboard images and craft stamps and basically punching out all of these skin areas with these craft stamps and mounting that on some kind of metal. So on the wall there would be this, all of the advertising images gone except for the skin. So no eyes, no teeth, just no hair, just this, the skin, no clothes anymore. So just where there was skin would be left in these, you know, cute decorative things. It was just very, you know, surprising, interesting work that everyone was doing. I loved it. They also did something at the end of each night called the Late Show, where if you still had any energy left at the end of the day, anyone, the participants, you could sign up and you'd have 3 minutes to show your work. Only 3 minutes. But it was a riot because it's, you know, that's not designed by the, you know, the curators of the conference. It's just anyone. So you just this kind of, hello, you still there?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, I heard a click. this kind of expression of the people, the diversity, and you just saw some amazing work.
Great. Well, I'm just looking at it, our time is fast going. I think there's a whole lot more you could probably talk about the conference and that. But if people are interested in finding more about you or finding more about upcoming exhibits and stuff like that, where can they get that information?
Well, the best place to go is my website, and there's lots of, you know, gallery pages of paintings you can look at. There's also a blog on there which shows a bit what I'm thinking about these days. So the site for that is philirish.com.
Okay, great. Phil, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thanking my guest, Phil Irish, and be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.